First, think about all of the buttons you might have pushed so far today. The button to start your coffee maker, buttons to cross the street, call an elevator, turn on the TV, the like button on social media, and more. Our next guest says buttons look simple, but they have a complicated history and they tell a story about labor and gender and power relations in our culture. Rachel Plotnick is an assistant professor of cinema and media studies in the Media School at Indiana University Bloomington. Her new book is called Power Button, A History of Pleasure, Panic, and the Politics of Pushing. Rachel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I think probably a lot of us could have gone our whole lives pushing buttons and not really stopping to think about them. What caught your eye? Why did you stop and look at this daily fact of our lives?
Yeah, I think it was just really the ubiquity of this technology. As I began to look around, I was just astounded by how much I push buttons in my own daily life, watching my children pushing buttons, and everything from those physical buttons we push in our kitchens and on our garage door openers to our social media. It just seemed like one of this sort of taken for granted technologies that's really everywhere.
And in your book, you take us through the rise of buttons, mainly in the late 1800s. There's argument about what the first one might be, and that's okay. But while it seems automatic, we get what a button does, people had to be trained on what these were and what they did, right?
Yes, that was what was really interesting to me, was just to see all of the anxiety around button pushing, the uncertainty about what buttons would do to an early electrifying society. And one of the things that I really noticed is that people were just concerned broadly about electrification and industrialization and introducing machines into everyday life. And I think buttons offered this kind of safe face potentially that could make that electricity less, scary or intimidating.
Right. And that's something you write about, that the thing that the button might do might be really profound. It might make a big machine work. It could turn on a light. It could do a lot of different things. But that was all hidden. It was the mere touch of a button was the common phrase that was used to mask the complicated stuff going on behind the scenes.
Exactly. And I think even to this day, that's what makes buttons so attractive, is they operate on this kind of cause and effect system where you don't have to understand what's happening inside of the machine or behind the button. All you have to do is just push it. And then you get this kind of instant gratification or effect that's really pleasurable and gratifying. And so I think even back then, that was maybe even more intensified by the fact that people weren't used to seeing lights turn on or these different kinds of electrical mechanisms, you know, all of a sudden be spurred into motion.
And there was concern. You mentioned anxiety. Instead of using muscle and power to do things, we were just touching a button. Were people worried about what that meant, about whether we were actually doing work?
Absolutely. I think this was a primary theme that came up in my research, was this idea that, hey, we're sort of transferring all of our manual labor over to machines. And are we becoming a society that privileges effortless interaction too much? You know, do we want some things to be hard? For example, if you're going to take a life through the death penalty, should you have to actually work hard to take that life? Or should you just allow it to happen through this really easy mechanism of pushing a button? And so I think in many contexts, it became this concern over, do we really want to make everything in life so easy, so effortless? And should some things be a little bit more difficult than just pushing a button?
You mentioned, you talk about class and power dynamics with buttons. And one of the, you had a letter that somebody had written, I can't remember exactly. It's so difficult. I have to pull this bell, you know, and I have to go and maybe it doesn't work. And I have to really pull on it to call my servants or workers in to help me out. Isn't there a better way? This was a big part of why we ended up with buttons that rang bells.
Yes. You know, bells were one of the earliest uses of push buttons. And I think it was fascinating to see how people were complaining about having to use these hand crank bells or pull these levers. And so that was one of the first areas that you saw buttons really being employed, was to actuate bells in this way. And so there was a lot of discussion about how can we reduce the arm or even the whole hand just to that finger. And so I call that kind of the evolution of digital labor, which is only using our four fingers to kind of interact with all of these machines.
And that led to the rise of the character hated by workers, the push button boss.
Exactly. Yes, push button managers were really reviled, which I found so fascinating. You know, so many people complaining about usually the man who would sit behind a desk and just call his employees all day by pushing a button. Hey, come here for this. Hey, come here for that. And that's where you really saw that power imbalance between the manual laborer and the digital laborer, someone who just got to sit behind their desk and give out orders all day. People didn't like the feeling of being treated like servants.
Talking to Rachel Plotnick, author of the new book, Power Button, A History of Pleasure, Panic, and the Politics of Pushing. Rachel, from, I guess, the earliest vending machines to now Amazon buttons wherever we want them, you write that buttons have made it really easy for us to be consumers. Can you talk about how that evolved?
Yes, I think that was one of the primary ideas behind, you know, putting push buttons on so many technologies at the turn of the 20th century, was this idea that we can turn everyone into consumers by putting buttons on things. Because as we all know, it's really pleasurable to just push something and then get that thing that you want at the end, as we were talking about earlier. So you saw buttons crop up on things like consumer cameras, you know, the early Kodak cameras, to everything from vending machines and elevators, and as we talked about, bells. So I think in all these instances, there was this idea that we can convince consumers that electricity is good if we can also get them to push buttons and get those things that they're wanting.
And now Amazon has, I haven't experimented with these, you can put a button on your fridge, I guess, that says, you know, order whatever product from Amazon right now. And those have actually been outlawed in some countries. Is that right?
Yes, that's so fascinating. Yeah, so the Amazon Dash button, I think, has been an effort by the company to really sort of get across this idea that you can push a button and get anything that you want at any time. You know, you want toilet paper, just push that button. You're out of laundry detergent, just push that button. So it really takes this idea of push button consumerism, I think, to the extreme. And Germany has recently outlawed these buttons because of their lack of transparency, because consumers who push them don't necessarily know whether the price has changed on the product or really any information about what they're getting, other than I just want to order that thing. And so I think this is a potential problem or downside with making everything sort of available at the push of a button, is what kind of information are we giving consumers, and are they really able to make an educated choice when they push those buttons?
And earlier on in the button world than I would have expected, you write that we started using buttons as metaphors for our bodies, our psychology, in some cases sexuality. Can you talk about how buttons became these metaphors in our daily lives?
Yeah, I think this is really fascinating. You know, of course, we probably all say, oh, so-and-so is pushing my buttons. You know, that's a really popular expression. And even in the late 19th century, people started thinking about what it meant to activate one's body by button or to turn someone on by button. And there definitely was a kind of sexual association with buttons as well. One of the interesting parts of my research found that doctors, even especially gynecologists, would talk about women's clitorises as electric buttons that you could push just to sort of turn them on. And they talked about this as very problematic, that we want to sort of reduce women's desire and therefore castrate them and turn off their electric buttons. So I think this was really an important kind of metaphor for thinking about control and how do we control different people's bodies in different ways and who gets access to that control. And so I think this metaphor of body and button has really continued to the present moment.
So what do we lose when we think of buttons as, I guess, just a source of convenience, making our lives easier? Again, at the mere touch of a button, we get whatever we want.
Yeah, for me, the main goal, and I think the idea behind my book, is to say, let's not just say either buttons are only good or only bad, because of course they're much more complicated than that. But how can we pay attention to many of the power dynamics that lurk behind them? Thinking about those questions of the push button manager or the consumer or someone working in a factory, you know, in all of these cases, there are the haves and the have nots, the people who get to push and the people who are then spurred to action by pushing. So I've really advocated for saying, let's look closer at the social dynamics that exist behind buttons, rather than just paying attention to whether they're good or bad. And I think that also extends then to thinking about usability and how they work and people's daily experiences with buttons as well.
Now, a lot of the concerns you write about people having in the late 1800s, you know, what new technology would do, are our jobs becoming too easy, that sort of thing. Those same conversations are happening about new technologies today, but literally today. Do you see a lot of similar themes from then till now?
There are remarkable parallels. I couldn't believe how many of the complaints, you know, in the 1900s were the same as what we're talking about right now. I think we worry about button mashers in video games, and we worry about people who are professionals losing their jobs to people who can just go ahead and push buttons, whether that's taking selfies or producing electronic music. So it's really everywhere still this question of, have we de-skilled our society? Does pushing a button make life too easy? So I don't think we've answered those kind of fundamental questions, even after all this time.
Digging into this history and looking at the story of buttons, do you find yourself hesitating before you push a button on an elevator, a phone, whatever?
I definitely think about it a lot more. You know, I think these are very seductive control mechanisms. They're very useful in daily life, but I can't hesitate but sort of pay attention to how buttons function in my universe and my ecosystem. And, you know, they are very, I think, much more salient and relevant to me than I ever would have noticed just a few years ago before studying these questions.
We'll leave it there for now. Rachel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Rachel Plotnick is an assistant professor of cinema and media studies at Indiana University. Her new book is called Power Button: A History of Pleasure, Panic, and the Politics of Pushing.